Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Monday at this time, we get our house call from Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great. You know, can't wait for this weather to cool down a little bit, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, I think maybe a cold front by the weekend. Lots of questions about the coronavirus, as always, especially the lead story that Steve Grzanich has been talking about on the newscast regarding the 239 experts with one big claim: the coronavirus is airborne. This is about the World Health Organization, what they have long believed to be true, and what some scientists in 32 countries are now saying. Give us the lowdown on this, Doc.
Yeah, so we know it's, well, we got to make sure we understand the difference between airborne and droplets. So droplets, we know, will only go a certain distance, and then they are so heavy that gravity is going to take them down to the ground, and they're going to be out of the air circulation. Airborne means that now it's in the air, and it can circulate and stays airborne and stays around a lot longer in the air versus dropping to the ground. So if that's true, then you have to look at the infectious nature of the virus to say, wait a second, are we now concerned to a point where this 6 to 8 feet is out the window now, because now we know that the virus can actually travel and stay in the air suspended longer. So although 239 scientists signed it, there's still a heck of a lot out there that still feel that if you look at the science behind it and the tracing behind it, it certainly appears to be more prevalent by droplet versus airborne.
So what does that mean for us going about our daily lives here?
Well, it depends. If more people get behind this and more science is done and more data is done, it would change things dramatically. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. In the hospitals here, we recirculate air in each of the rooms about maybe 15, 20, 30 times an hour, way more than you do in your house, you know, way more than you do anywhere else. But now we would say, hey, we need to start looking at air circulation, filters, and what are we going to now say about masking and the times we have to wear masks? Is it going to be all the time now, regardless of whether you're 6 to 8 feet away from someone?
Hmm. And what about being outside? I was talking to somebody over the weekend who insisted you should be wearing masks even if you're outside. And my belief was, well, if you can't keep social distancing, yes, but otherwise you're okay outside.
Correct. And remember, the mask is protecting you, expecting others from you. So we're trying to protect if you're an asymptomatic person out. Now, assuredly, we do get some protection from masks, but we're not wearing N95 masks, which are the masks that are going to protect us when you're outside. Those masks, I will tell you, are not comfortable to wear, and people say, gosh, we should all be wearing N95s to protect each other. It's very, very difficult to wear those masks for a long period of time, and those are the ones that actually protect you as an individual. So when you're outside, still, I think social distancing plus the air movement alone is very protective.
Another story in the news over the weekend was somewhat confusing. Most infected people apparently don't pass on the coronavirus to someone else, but a small number pass it on to many others, and they're calling that the super spreader effect. Can you explain that a little bit, Doc?
Right. Yeah. So we've talked all along that we've tested a lot of people that have no symptoms whatsoever, yet they still have the virus in their body. So we're concerned on those individuals, can they spread it? Well, it certainly appears, at least from a group of studies, that the spread is not so much all of the asymptomatic people, but specific asymptomatic people in almost specific social settings. So we're sitting here saying, is the person who's asymptomatic, who's just talking from a distance, am I concerned there? The concern should be dropped. But we're seeing that this spreads early on in illness, and the super spreaders, you know, especially in a setting of a bar, a wedding, a large gathering, dormitories, those are going to be the ones that we're concerned about in that social setting with people who early on in the disease, early on in the illness, have a large viral load and are expelling virus out.
And medical professionals like yourself, do you see the news about these holiday gatherings and then mark your calendar for 2 weeks from now to see what will happen? And do you fear the worst?
Well, I do. I look at it at different parts of the country. You know, if I was in Houston or Arizona, I certainly would be strongly disappointed looking at what we're looking at there. You know, you're talking about two areas of the country where we're hitting ICU rates. That's my big measure there, is ICU and hospitalization rates that are in the mid-90s. You don't have any room. The Houston hospitals potentially are going to be overrun, and I feel sorry for those individuals in those hospitals and those in those communities, because they may be put in situations where they're going to be making some very difficult decisions based on volume. So very disappointing in Houston to see what we saw over the weekend. I mean, everyone's talking about Texas. Either they didn't have their TVs on, or it's just sheer ignorance.
Not since June 5th have more than 1,000 new cases a day been reported here in Illinois. So are you optimistic that we're going to continue the downward trend, Doc?
Yeah, Bob, you know, I look at the number of tests that we're doing. We're certainly going to start to see some increases in testing. But I still go back to, tell me what's going on in the hospital setting. Tell me about these severe illnesses, and tell me about what's going on in your ICUs. I can tell you that we here at Central DuPage hit a high of 95 COVID patients in the hospital, you know, weeks ago, and we are down now in the mid-teens. So that's very promising. We've held in the teens now for almost a week. Now, that being said, it looks like we dodged Memorial Day, but what's going to happen now with 4th of July, and are we going to see a bump up like we have seen across? We certainly hope not. We certainly hope that people in Illinois have been a little bit smarter, at least those around here in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, let's hope. Continuing our Monday morning house call with Dr. Kevin Most. Doc, I think my problem is I'm consuming too much news about the coronavirus, and then the more I hear, the more I read, the more confused I get. There were a couple of stories over the weekend about the tests. False positives. Some people have, I guess, what's called just remnants of the virus. They test positive, but they really are not contagious and they have no problems. And then there are false negatives. Can you clear up the deal on tests?
Sure. And you kind of hit it spot on, because a positive test, what does that tell us? That tells us that we have identified virus in your body, or remnants of virus, because we're looking for actually pieces of the virus when we're doing the testing. So is that a false positive? Well, it's a positive test. You have the virus. But does it mean that you're spreading it? Does it mean that you're ill? No, it doesn't. So this is a difficult one, because it's tough with a disease where we have asymptomatic people that are going to have the virus in their body and test positive, and yet they really are not a harm to themselves or a harm to others if they were to be out and around. The false negatives are the ones that we're a little bit more concerned about, right? Individual has a test, they tell them it's negative, and then they go back and they get a little complacent, they don't wear masks appropriately, and now that they can spread it. So we know that people will continue to test positive in some cases for 10, 20, 30 days after the illness. They're not sick, they're not spreading the illness, but yet they still have remnants. So they are positive, and you can call it a false positive if you want, if you're going to equate the result of the test with illness.
That's interesting. So will there be a test? Are they working on a test that will be more definitive, that would differentiate between people who just have the remnants and people who are really in trouble and very contagious?
Yeah, the push is definitely going to be to do exactly what you just said. Take, for example, the breathalyzer concept, right? And that's really, I think, what hopefully is going to play out here. If you blow X on a breathalyzer for alcohol, you're deemed to be intoxicated because it can not only identify alcohol, but it can identify alcohol at a specific level. We hope that we can find that, and this will be the tech side of COVID testing. Will we be able to do a breathalyzer test, or a test that shows us how much virus you have and how active it is versus yes, it's there, or no, it's not? So the quantitative, in other words, the numerical value, like in a breathalyzer, would be the home run to say, yeah, you test positive, but you're so low in this number, in the fragments that you have, you're not contagious, we're not concerned about you.
And as far as how you can catch COVID-19, we know that close-range, face-to-face interactions are dangerous. What about high-touch surfaces? We're told doorknobs are a risk, but the virus degrades quickly, so maybe other surfaces like the cardboard boxes are less worrisome. Do we have that right?
Absolutely. You know, we're really, when we look at the chance of transmission from a surface to a person, our concern has dropped dramatically. And the reason for it is, think about this. You have the virus. You would cough on something, then some other individual has to touch that something and then touch their face within a very short period of time with enough viral load to cause illness. So we're not seeing much of that, if any. When we do contact tracing, we're really starting to see that, boy, this disease is spread early in the illness and in large numbers if you are around large numbers of people. We're not seeing, boy, this guy is the Typhoid Mary that if they touch anything, people better stay away. Not as concerning, but that's not to say we shouldn't be diligent in keeping our environment clean, but certainly much more important to wear masks and be careful when you're around any individuals who may have any symptoms at all.
What about a face shield? Is that as good as a mask? Is it better than a mask?
No, and remember, face shields for us, when you see people in the news and the medical field wearing face shields, the reason that they're wearing a face shield is to protect themselves from the virus, because we know it can actually enter the body through the eyes. So the wearing a face shield is going to protect you. Wearing the regular mask that you walk out in public is protecting others. So if you want to get to total protection, could you walk around with a face mask and a mouthpiece, a mask? Mm-hmm. Absolutely you could, but don't just take the face mask and say, I don't need the mask. Since I have the face shield on, I don't need the mask. Two totally different reasons to wear them.
Gotcha. And then there is a global study in the news that found strong evidence that a new form of the coronavirus has spread from Europe to the United States. How concerned are you and your colleagues about this?
Well, and the interesting thing about this, Bob, is the concern can go one of either two ways, because the new mutation, which we know it's going to mutate. So the new mutation appears to spread easier, but it has less symptoms. So you might say, well, is that good? Is that bad? That's going to still play out, right? If it spreads easier, boy, we certainly don't like that. But if there's less symptoms, will people then get protection without really having much infection? Hmm. The bigger key is, anytime you have a mutation, you have to take two steps back and say, wait a second, we're running down this road for a vaccine. Did that mutation just change our vaccine and the effectiveness of our vaccine? If you look at influenza, we get a flu shot every year. It's not 100% positive. It's not 100% protective, but it certainly decreases the severity of the illness, and it's often because of mutations within the virus.
Still optimistic about a vaccine early next year, maybe?
Yeah, I am. I think that, you know, so much science and so much technology and so much money is being thrown at this right now. I think that you're starting to see some pretty promising, at least phase two studies results come out, which is encouraging, because now a lot of the big phase three are starting. You know, a big phase three started last week. Another big phase three will start here in about 2 weeks. And you still have 100 companies trying to make this vaccine. So I think we'll, out of someone in that group, we're going to start to see some positive ones. And you hope it's the ones that have invested in already starting to produce the vaccine, even though it's not been proven to be effective yet.
All right. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, I can't tell you how we appreciate your time every Monday morning here. Your visits with us are so informative. I'm just hoping that my insurance covers this. I'll check.
You got it, Bob. Take care. And hopefully one day soon we'll be talking about something besides COVID, right?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? All right. Yep. Talk to you next
Take
Monday
care.
Morning.